Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk.
The professor, the publisher, and the editor welcome you to the Media Project for this week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my colleague Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and here sitting in between us, as usual, trying to keep the warring parties separate, is Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston. Are you okay? You ready for this?
I'm all right. I brought my extra box of Band-Aids this week in case I don't duck the crossfire.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I think it's always good to be well prepared. Are you prepared, Dr. Shartok?
It's a wonderful thing, as Rex Smith always says.
That's what I always say to fill the air when I don't know what else to say.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, my little trite. Actually, you know why I say it's a wonderful thing? Because I got into trouble by using the expression amazing too much.
Yeah, you did.
I say amazing.
Amazing, and then it's a wonderful thing. And then you have another one, whether you realize it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with bless your heart.
Bless your heart, which is what I say when I really mean...
Yeah, don't bless your heart.
Don't
right.
say that. Yeah, I can't say it there what I really mean by that.
Those Midwestern sayings.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good thing.
I used to be flattered when my Midwestern friends used to say, bless your heart. Then I figured it out.
It actually means up yours. Anyway, it's a... I think we can say that on public radio.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so we will lead off with a little bit of recent news about the New York Times, the largest and most successful newspaper in the United States.
Maybe the world.
Offering employee buyouts. Actually, this is an interesting shift. They are trying to get rid of a whole range of copy editors who read the stories before they go into the paper in order to hire as many as 100 more journalists, it says here in the story, more reporters and producers.
But also with an emphasis on the digital.
Yes.
Because I know that I never see the paper anymore. We buy it on Sunday, but you know, I'm a subscriber and I read it several times a day. And I have a feeling an awful lot of other people are in the same thing. So Rex, you deserve a lot of credit because at your newspaper, you proceeded. You've been doing much the same thing, haven't you?
You're right. We all have been, though, actually. It's part of the shift, but we have been downsizing the editing ranks in order to try to maintain the number of reporters, not totally successfully. We've all been shrinking as ad revenues continue to shrink. You know, part of that
sure,
whole,
of course.
The loss of bricks and mortar stores who have been the backbone of newspaper advertising is really having its impact. So we're all doing it, you know, and you worry about it because the result is you do see more errors in the paper.
Oh, do
right?
you? I was going to ask you that. Do you really see more errors?
Don't you, Ira?
Without a doubt. You know, that's why I didn't realize the balance that you just described at the Times Union. But as I read the New York Times plans, on the one hand, you could say, well, that's great. They understand the value of reporting and getting people on the street. But I just feel like a newspaper, particularly like the New York Times, needs that level of editing that they've had. And it's going to suffer. The content is going to get sloppy. I see it, you know, in my former newspaper, and it has to. There's just not enough eyeballs looking at the stories anymore.
You know, I got two emails from people complaining about errors they had seen in the paper. The word ween was misspelled W-E-E-N instead of W-E-A-N, and somebody objected to...
Which is short for weenie.
No, not exactly. Well, I'm having a little campfire there. And, you know, it has an impact. Traditionally, there have been at least two layers of editors. The copy desk, which is the last read before stuff goes to publication, either digital or print. And then before that, there was what in the Times are called backfielders, the backfield, which are the first read people assigned to the city desk, the local editors. And we have the same system, but lately, a lot of stories are only getting one read.
But you used to talk about, Rex, you used to talk about the slot. What was the slot?
Well, the slot was the person who was the chief of those copy editors, basically, the person who would assign the stories. Stories would come in the slot, used to be actually sitting in the middle of a horseshoe. It was the way that a lot of desks were set up. It would assign the stories and keep track of everything, sort of the traffic cop, and would frequently read back on the main stories, that is, give a third read to the main stories, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Most newspaper offices now don't have the old slot. City desks in the slot, but they still call it that. You know, with the push to get content, as much content as necessary these days, and then to get it up fast, inevitably there is going to be stuff that is going to go through that shouldn't see the light of day. And that ultimately is going to cause news organizations more problems than they bargained for, because that we know what we're hearing and seeing about fake news. So it's just going to increase the possibility of mistakes in newspapers.
Well, you know, Garrison Keillor has talked for years about the society of English majors of, you know, no job. So some of what we hear, I mean, if I say, to add emphasis, if I say the word ain't, that ain't right. Mm-hmm. Which I say a lot. Mm-hmm. I know the word ain't right. Ain't right, yeah. But I say it anyway, and then I will certainly hear from somebody who says, Dr. Shartok, as a college professor, you really ought to know better than that.
Yeah, there are some things, old rules, that need to fall, like splitting infinitives. Sometimes it's smart to wisely split infinitives. See what I did there? That's just an old rule that is derived actually from Latin, where you can't split an infinitive. And so a lot of English teachers said you can't split an infinitive. That's preposterous.
And in fact, that's how words get into the dictionary.
Yeah.
They start getting used by a lot of people. And then even though they were slang at one point, they become words.
Or unused. Like ween, W-E-E-N, actually was an old English word, but we don't use it anymore.
So what do you two guys think about, in addition to what the Times is doing with getting rid of editors and replacing them with more reporters,
right,
they're also getting rid of the public editor?
I was just behind you on that one, Ira, because I'm fascinated. I've interviewed many of the public editors here at WAMC. I spent an hour with them, and these are usually very distinguished people. But it was an interesting concept. They were pressed to have an ombudsman, but they didn't do that. They had what's called the public editor.
Similar, almost the same.
Yeah, same thing.
People have the same. It basically is somebody who sits independently of the editor and comments for their own publication on things. And I've never been a real fan of the concept, because it seemed to me that what you're doing is you're setting up one editor to second guess a team, because decisions in the newsroom are generally made by a group, not by one individual. And you're saying this person, however great they may be, I mean, the current one at the Times, Liz Spade, former editor of the Columbia Journalism Review, preceding that, Margaret Sullivan, the former editor of the Buffalo News, now media columnist for the Washington Post, you know, really good people writing thoughtful columns. But why should we invest with them all that authority to have a...
And all that money.
Yeah, well, yeah,
the cost. Well, but the distinction is, I would imagine, that being truly the reader's representatives, the public editor receives all of this feedback from readers, and then the public editor is in a unique position to literally go to the editor or the publisher or any of the relative important people at the New York Times and get comments that you and I as average readers wouldn't be able to do. So
That's true. Truly
a reader's representative. I tend to agree with you that if the public editor starts drawing conclusions and second guessing, that doesn't excite me as much. But I do like the idea of the public editor getting the answers to questions that readers may have.
Well, now, the Times is still going to do that. They're creating something called the Reader Center, which is going to overlap somewhat. It's going to be, I think it's three people that they're going to have who will respond directly to readers, explain coverage decisions, invite readers to contribute their voices. We have that in our newsroom. We have a senior editor named Tina Tyler, who part of her responsibility...
I love that name, Tina Tyler.
Yeah, that's right.
It's perfect.
Yeah, isn't that great? TT, yes. We have long had too many women with T first names, so I...
So you have to hire in there.
I brought in Lisa to try to change things. But Tina actually is the reader's voice in the newsroom and will be the person who directly responds. She leads an engagement team who is supposed to directly deal with readers. So that's...
And of course, there are letters to the editor,
yep,
and you can raise things that way. But I could just see, you know, Mr. Sulzberger, when his secretary says, the public editor is here to see you, sir. I can just see his eyes, you know, going from one end of his face to the other. But maybe not. Maybe not.
Well,
but,
you know.
But here's the thing about ombudspeople. I'm with you on this, Rex, rather than Ira, because I think it leads to dysfunction at a time when the last thing you need is dysfunction in one of these places. And also, I always think that they were sort of chicken, because, you know, they don't do the real tough things. For example, does a news organization, any news organization, have a, what we could call an S list, a list of unacceptable quotes or people? We don't go to them because we don't like them. You know, that's a tough one, but I've never seen a public editor handle that one, for example.
But let's remember, at the time that the public editor trend began to grow was at the time when newspapers were being heavily criticized as being too cloistered and that the readers did not feel they had a voice. And I believe that was the nation era for these public
editors. Do you think that's changed, Ira?
Well, I think it's changed if you accept the fact that you can, in fact, speak your mind in a public forum by going on Twitter or other social media, and there's appeal to that. But as we all painfully know from our own experience, it also opens it up to trolls and people who are not serious or people who just want to create mischief.
Boy, does it ever.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think the conservative critique of the public editors has been that they, you're right, what you said, Alan, that they haven't taken on the underlying assumptions of the news organizations.
They haven't really gone for it.
Yeah, they tend to reflect readers' concerns, but not so much, you know, I suppose a public editor might try to dig really deeply over and over and over again into questions about what you called, what's that German word that you use all the time?
Weltanschauung.
There you go.
The Weltanschauung of the organization.
Yeah.
The worldview.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to use German words during the Trump era.
Hey, I'm all right with that.
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Festfeld, and Rex Smith here. You can share your thoughts with us, media@wamc.org, and we will bring that into next week's show. Actually, speaking of the Times, the New York Times editor, Dean Baquet, had an interesting speech the other day in Rancho Palos Verdes, California, where he said the biggest crisis in American journalism is local news. And I appreciate that. This is drawing increasing attention. The current issue of Columbia Journalism Review is entirely devoted to the crisis of local news. That is different from what the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, USA Today are doing.
They're going in the other direction.
National and World. Yeah, they're growing their digital base hugely.
Bigly.
Those are bigly.
Okay, Ira. Dear Mr. Fussfeld.
The president is saying, not bigly, he's saying big league.
Yes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. He doesn't really think bigly is a word.
But what do you make of that, Rex? Because your newspaper, which is really a regional newspaper, I've seen days when, you know, the front page story becomes much more important in terms of locality than, you know, Trump's latest indignity.
Yeah, we do that. And the problem is that people are not as engaged in civic affairs as they used to be, and so they believe they can get by without taking in the local news. And so then they're surprised when local officials do things that they wish they wouldn't.
So, you know, every once in a while when I'm flipping the channels and I can't watch Gunsmoke because it's not on at that moment, I'll go to the public access and I'll watch the BORED, Board of Education, and watch them doing that stuff. It is so transfixing to be able to see. It's
really?
Like sap coming out of a tree very, very slowly. And you watch it and you say, how could this be? Why?
This is why we have reporters to do that for you, you see.
But you used to anyway.
Well, we used to.
Well, that's true. And that, of course, is the danger to society, is that as many of these meetings are going undercovered or not covered at all, that allows the board to do pretty much whatever it wants without any kind of public scrutiny. And that's a serious problem.
You know, but the theory that hasn't quite developed is that the internet would enable a lot of individual citizen journalists to go out there and report on that kind of thing.
Sure, what the Board of Education did.
It does a little bit that works that way, but not as much as we thought it would, because people tend to just want to write their opinions and not actually report about what's going on.
So, Rex, as we speak, your paper, the Albany Times-Union, which is a very good newspaper,
well, thank you,
had a right-hand story which transfixed me, because it's something I'm very interested in, about the people who are around Cuomo and that the U.S. attorney has been asking for certain kinds of information for all of them, and some of them have even been my students, and wanting to know, you know, what's up. Now, if we go on with our Vox Pop program at 2 o'clock every day and say, okay, today we're going to discuss the latest crisis in state government, you got to really give that phone number again and again and again and sort of pray for it. But you put the word and say, today we're going to talk about Trump's latest utterance on his thing in the morning, and every phone is lit.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely true. I mean, what's the biggest hit for Twitter in the first 5 years that it existed? It was not a huge international news event. It was not the tsunami in Japan. It wasn't the election of a president. It was Beyoncé's pregnancy being announced. So, you know, people have attention to issues like that. On your Vox Pop, people line up to call in when the vet is on to talk about their
dog poop.
Yeah.
And whether or not the dog is eating his own poop.
Yeah, and the cat's incontinence. And you know, I could argue that, you know, you can take a superior attitude about this and say, well, we shouldn't devote our airtime to that. But, you know, we publish comics and crossword puzzles.
And the bridge column, and nobody plays bridge anymore.
Well,
very few people.
You'd be surprised how people might react if I got rid of the bridge column.
You did. You once made that mistake.
I made that mistake, yes.
But would you agree that we the print press particularly, because we're the ones who used to do it regularly, we have become derelict in our duty, generally speaking, because we do not have enough people to go to the places we used to go to regularly, and thus we are not reporting local stories that need to be reported.
So the question then becomes, do you give them what they want, or do you give them what they need?
Well, we can't do either right now because we're trying to save money. We simply don't have the wherewithal.
We're falling down. I wouldn't say that we're entirely derelict. That sounds almost like we have totally abandoned the effort. But I certainly agree that we don't have what we used to have. Our news staff has shrunk. Everyone's has in the legacy news media. And there has not yet been a model that has developed out of the great potential of the internet that has replaced these great news organizations.
And you know what, Rex? It's even a little bit more dangerous than we might have thought, because how are particularly, you know, the right-wing stations, which just read your newspaper every day during the news, if you have less, they have less.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
If we think don't about that.
It, yeah, it is kind of funny. We'll sit in the afternoon meeting where we decide what stories we're going to publish. And we'll hold a story and say, no, let's wait a day. We don't have room for that on the front page, but it's a good front page story. Just yesterday, I had two stories that are front page stories. We just didn't have enough room on the front page, so I held them in case we might have room for them today. And you know what's going to happen? When we put those stories on the front page, miraculously, the other news organization, this community, will at the same time discover that story. Isn't that remarkable?
Fascinating. And here I always thought you were following us.
But you know, you have a great luxury in that you are able to hold that story and not really be concerned that somebody else will get it before you.
Yeah. So we only do it with stories that are our enterprise that we don't think somebody else is going to do. When there's breaking news, we have to do it. And the difficulty is that there isn't enough space to do everything you need, and there aren't enough reporters to do everything. And the problem that we all face is that if you cut your reporting staff in order to have enough money to sustain your operation, you end up making the newspaper no deeper than a TV station. You know, the problem for TV stations is they have so few reporters that the reporters have to all be generalists. That's why they have to copy us, because we have beat reporters who can go out and actually get stories. And if we cut our reporters such a fine number, we won't have enough content to differentiate us from the other news organizations to make us worthwhile.
So, Rex, do the reporters, as a result of attrition, let's put it kindly, do the reporters all have to use muscles they never knew they had? In other words, do they have to work harder?
Yes. I would say they have to work smarter. I've got this wonderful young reporter, for example, preparing a big package for Sunday that's beautifully written, but she's also shot photography and she's done video and she's worked with another staff member to produce charts to go with it and is actually even taking part in the conversation about the software that we will use to present it visually online. Reporters tweet every time that there's a breaking news story so that it gets out quickly. They use social media a lot. So yeah, reporters have to do a lot more than they ever used to.
Taking pictures.
We really do need them to take their own pictures now, a lot of them. So that's tough stuff.
Let me then ask you an uncomfortable question, both of you, because I know you both had a lot to do with this. But along with that comes the protector of so many of the reporters, which are the unions, who have been there for a long time. It seems to me from the anecdotal stories I'm hearing that the unions are not what they once were. Is that right?
Well, they have fewer members.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that
they're... I mean that they become more toothless than they used to be. They used to be able to threaten you guys and used to walk in here all pale and, you know, sweaty.
I think that there is a grudging admission on the part of many of the unions, particularly in the newspaper business, that the economic distress is real And so we're not talking about negotiating at a time when the management would be trying to save some money to put in its own pockets. Now management is trying to save some money to keep the operation going. And I believe there's much more of a recognition of that on the union's part. That doesn't mean that they're not trying very hard to do better for their people. But you don't usually read, even in this new story about the New York Times that we just discussed, the union head is quoted as saying, in effect, we're very disappointed and this could be damaging to the operation, et cetera. But I don't see any threats as a result of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
You used to get threats.
Well, yeah,
you?
Because they thought that the publisher of the New York Times is putting that money in his pocket or it's going to the board. And now I think they recognize that there is not enough money to run the operation.
Very interesting. So you think that just what I take away from that is that the publisher of the New York Times has to move from a larger apartment.
So instead of making eight figures, he's making seven figures.
Well, yeah, but I think everybody recognizes that this is real. It used to be that the union president in my shop said, well, it's not happening at the Times Union.
This is media in the broadest sense. My son is a member of the Writers Guild of America. He's a writer in Los Angeles. And they just settled a contract, but they have a lot of power out there, and the TV industry is doing very well, so that they were able to essentially give the writers everything they wanted, because they knew that the writers were serious about going out on strike, and the writers couldn't.
And have in the past.
And have in the past, and they would have shut down the industry.
So you're not going to see, sorry for interrupting, but you're not going to see reporters and other people at newspapers going out on strike? Is there any evidence that that has stopped happening?
I haven't heard of any strikes.
You'll see byline strikes. You'll see...
Byline meaning you take your byline off.
Yeah, you take your byline off.
You might
see a union try to organize advertiser action to embarrass the newspaper. It's a little counterproductive because you're taking news money out of the newspaper's pocket. But you just don't see strike threats anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah, and when you have had unions who have said, boycott the newspaper...
that's pretty stupid.
They get pushback from their own members because everybody recognizes that, wait a minute, that's not going to do us any good in the long run.
And I thought byline strikes were ineffective also. And the average reader doesn't care or doesn't recognize that there's no byline.
I don't agree. I look to see who's writing the article.
You're not an average reader.
No, that's true.
You know that he's the only guy in this room with a PhD.
I heard that. Last week we had two. I felt very badly about it. I was not one of them.
You were not one of them.
No.
But you held your own. You did very well. I listened to the show. So we have to make a couple of notes to TV before we go, because that's where most people get their news, we are sad to say, these days. It was a huge deal when Walter Cronkite retired, a big to-do when Dan Rather then gave up the anchor chair in CBS Evening News. So how big a deal is it that Scott Pelley, could you have said his name, in fact, is leaving his post as the CBS Evening News anchor to be replaced temporarily, at least by, anybody able to say this?
Anthony Mason.
Who's
quite good, I believe.
He's a fine young man. Actually, I've got an Anthony Mason
story,
but no time here.
Third degree Mason.
Yeah, third degree. And Megyn Kelly, of course, on NBC, opposite 60 Minutes. So that's a big change.
The point you've made, Rex, is a very good one. This is not Walter Cronkite leaving, but of course, people watching the news have gone down. I don't care a whit who is sitting in that chair doing what they're doing.
But it's a little bit of a surprise that CBS has done this, because CBS's morning show is a much more serious show. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do the cat stories. And I think Scott Pelley was a very much a dull kind of presence, but a straightforward news presence. And the fact that they are adhering to the ratings surprises me a little bit.
So what's an executive going to do except sit around and say, who should we fire this week?
Probably in public radio they do that too, right, Alan?
Oh, my goodness.
All right, we got to get out of here. That's all for the Media Project for this week. The publisher, the professor, the editor, thank you for joining us.
Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-ling, 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 ding. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Ira Fussfeld is the Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org, or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
It's wonderful to represent the day. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such...